Intelligent Talk.
1170 KCBQ.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you get concerned when people are too excited about God. Oh, sure, a little religion is good for the soul. It's those fanatics who concern you. I sympathize. I honestly do. Many nutcases go around in the name of Christianity, and who knows? Maybe some of them do belong in padded cells. They sound so loony, they set our cause back 2,000 years. At the same time, on the other hand, let's slow down a little bit. The mere fact that somebody might be excited about God should not in and of itself be cause for concern. According to the Bible, God wants to offer you a personal relationship through His Spirit. Now, maybe you don't automatically accept this. You may not believe in the Bible, and I respect that. Sometimes the promises in the Bible sound too good to be true, and that's understandable. But let's just think this through for a moment. If you could find God, wouldn't that be exciting? Wouldn't that be the most amazing phenomenon that could possibly happen to a human being? No? Well, I find that so interesting, especially on Super Bowl Sunday. Today, you will see people jumping up and down, yelling, screaming, crying, chanting, singing. And why? Why? Because millions upon millions of dollars are paid out for a bunch of men to throw around a ball. We pay them to play a game in front of us. Look, I'm not knocking football. I know it's our country's favorite sport. And if you love football, that's great. In fact, if you love football, you're probably not listening to my program right now anyway. But in case you decided to tune in for just a couple of minutes, think about this. We find it odd when people display emotion toward the God of the universe. But we don't find it strange when crowds go wild, ballistic, and downright trigger-happy at the sight of a pigskin being kicked across the field. What's wrong with this picture? In any event, welcome this Super Bowl Sunday. Welcome to every listener, both of you. Actually, the Bob Siegel Show has many listeners, but this is that one day a year when I'm reminded that Sunday afternoon is not the best day for a radio program. Still, there are a few people on the globe who are not into football. So if you're listening right now and you want to weigh in on some of our topics today, I would love to hear from you. In fact, today of all days, I would be just ecstatic and delighted to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. That's 1-888-344-1170. It's just you and me and this little recording studio. Well, Nancy's here. Well, Cameron's also here, but he has to be here. He gets paid to operate our soundboard, so he has no choice but to be here. Anyway, it's going to be an interesting program, and you're going to be glad you tuned in. For those of you listening on Saturday's repeat broadcast, though, right now, or those of you listening off my website later on in the week, where it's not actually Sunday while you're listening, those of you not listening live the way the good Lord intended you to listen, a plague on both your houses. That was a joke. It showed off a little bit of my Shakespeare, though, so I hope you were impressed. But it was a joke. Everybody knows Americans can't afford two houses anymore. So what I meant was a plague on your house, in the singular, or a plague on your apartment, if that applies. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we began a discussion about the second coming of Jesus Christ. And today, I will continue that discussion. There's much confusion about this subject, but the Bible actually describes a very specific sign Should we find ourselves living in the last generation, there is a way we can know for a definite fact that Christ is about to return. And your reward for not watching the ball game is to hear about this sign today. Later, I'm going to listen to the whole program. First, some highlights of the week, and then we will go on and take some calls. Have you seen the look of diplomacy on Barack Obama's face? Have you witnessed the compassion? Can you just smell the aroma of unity? He did it. He actually did it. He reached across the aisle just as he promised he would do. The Republican leaders from Congress were invited to his office for a special meeting. Obama wanted to hear their thoughts about the latest stimulus package. He listened actively. He smiled and nodded. He was friendly. He was cordial. Yes, sir. This is a man who delivers. Oh, just one thing. None of the Republican ideas made their way into the bill. Not even one made their way into the bill passed by the House, the same bill Obama will sign if it also slithers through the Senate. Obama promising to reach across the aisle is likened to a rental car company. You've been through this. They take your reservation, and then when you show up, they explain why they had to give your car to somebody who came in sooner. A reservation without a car is about as valuable as a suggestion box. The box remains stuffed and unopened, but your boss winks and pats you on the back and says, "Hey, we really appreciate your input." Okay, let's go to the phones, Cameron, and we have Eric from Vista. Eric, welcome to the Bob Siegel Show.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I actually just spent the first half of my day working with a client, and I share your views on organized sports, professional sports.
Well, it wasn't so much meant to be an indictment of sports as much as a comparison. Don't you find it odd, Eric, when people say that it's weird to get excited about something like God, but then they can get so excited about a ball being kicked around the field? I mean, there is a contrast here.
Well, that definitely prompted my call, because I want to share with you my thoughts on that. Personally, I think, you know, the big game is likened to Roman times, you know, the Colosseum and...
Oh, the gladiators and charioteers?
And all that, and when social unrest would start to ratchet up, they would increase the numbers of games and, you know, thereby pacifying the people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I see your point with that.
And I look at, you know, the big game, the Super Bowl or whatever, or any, you know, regular season game, I think it's kind of criminal, and I think it kind of... I'm kind of at a loss for words here.
Oh, but that's okay.
Basically, a bunch of guys are sitting around watching a football game, yelling and screaming, "Oh, you should have thrown," or "You should have, you stupid coach.
You throw like my grandmother." Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think it's a redirection of righteous anger. I think that men in general don't really get too riled up, too angered at all the social injustice and things that are going on, and they redirect that innate anger that should be directed towards, you know, injustice.
Yeah, now let me see if I'm following you, Eric. You're saying there's many righteous causes, and I don't think you're saying there's anything wrong with sports, but you're saying that there's a lot of righteous causes that people don't get riled up about. They tend to be passive. They tend to be pacified. And maybe the fact that they vented all at a ball game is the reason for that. And you're thinking, I don't know, maybe even the government might like encouraging ball games because they wouldn't want to see that passion put toward looking at what they're up to?
Sure, sure. I mean, like, I'm here in San Diego. I don't know where you're broadcasting from. But, I mean, we have a huge immigration problem, you know.
And we sure do.
And, you know, they're talking about, you know, putting in all this effort into keeping the Chargers here. It's just ridiculous.
Well, I have to admit, I'm a big lover of Star Trek. That, to me, is not a waste of time. But one of the characters on Star Trek, you might recall, was Mr. Spock, who found human behavior very bizarre. And I have to say, I've lived in San Diego since 1984, and I've never really cared whether the Chargers won a game or not. But I have a lot of friends out there who disagree with me vehemently, and I do respect where they're coming from, but I certainly agree with you. There are more important things going on, and there's nothing wrong with leisure, whether it's a movie, whether it's sports, whatever your leisure activities actually happen to be. But when people claim it's inappropriate to get excited about God or get excited about causes, but it is okay to jump up and down in the bleachers, there's a real interesting contrast here.
Yeah, and before I came on, you were mentioning the second coming of Christ and whatnot.
Yes.
I too am a Christian, and I believe very strongly that he will come back. Whether or not that's in our lifetime, I'm not quite sure. I'm not going to sit there and bank on it. And I'm not one of those Christians that just throws my arms up and says, well, you know, this, that, or the other thing is going to happen, and God's going to rescue us on golden ropes. I do believe in the rapture. I do believe it's necessary for evil to fully engulf the world like it will. You know, the righteous will be pulled out of the whole scenario. But whether or not it'll be in our lifetime, I don't know.
Yeah, Jesus did say no man knows the day or the hour, and it could be in our lifetime, but you're absolutely right. Whenever it is, we're still called to make this world a better place. In 1 Timothy chapter 2, we're told to pray for kings in high places that we may live a peaceful life.
Exactly.
And so we shouldn't be out there hoping persecution comes. I meet Christians all the time. They go, oh, I'm praying for persecution. I go, boy, buddy, pray for somebody else and not me, because I'm praying that we can make this culture better and I can leave a better place for my children and my grandchildren. That's what I'm praying for. But none of that means, Eric, that Christ couldn't come next year. And he is going to come, but no man knows the day or the hour.
He could come next week, you know. And I've, as a Christian, I've found myself asking the Lord, you know, how much more can you take? What's going to be your breaking point? You know, and I'm asking God this, you know, because.
Well, and of course, other generations in history have asked that same question. But, you know, it certainly could be in our generation. I wouldn't be at all surprised if God has his reasons for postponing it again, as he's done many times. That wouldn't surprise me anyway. Well, Eric, thank you for calling in, and it's nice to know somebody's listening even on Super Bowl Sunday. I probably have many kindred spirits out there that are not that much into football, but I really appreciate you calling in. I hope you'll give us a call again sometime.
Hey, no problem.
Okay, take care, buddy. You are listening to The Bob Siegel Show, 1-888-344-1170. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. And we will be right back. Your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
Hey, this is Lori K. Lewis, a frequent co-host on The Bob Siegel Show, Talk Radio 1170 on KCBQ. If you have questions or comments during this radio broadcast, please call Bob at this toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. Again, the number is 1-888-344-1170. We'd like to hear what you have to say.
Welcome back to our program. You're listening to Bob Siegel on KCBQ 1170, Intelligent Talk Radio. Coming up, we're going to continue a discussion that we did start a couple of weeks ago on the second coming of Jesus Christ. And I'm going to tell you what the Bible lists as a definitive sign, how you can actually know for a fact that you're the last generation. That sign has not happened yet. But if it did happen, then we would know we are in the last days. But first, we continue with the latest news. Are you having trouble understanding politicians when they say things with slick rhetoric and thick smiles? Well, lay your frustrations down by the riverside. Your old pal Bob is going to navigate you through. Allow me to offer some recent statements from our new president, Barack Obama, and then, after each statement, having consulted with skilled linguists around the world, I will provide a translation of what he truly means. Statement number one, the Israelians and the Palestinians, I said the Israelians, there's no such word as the Israelians, I guess we could say it that way, the actual pronunciation is Israelis. I knew that. I was just testing you. The Israelis and the Palestinians, according to Barack Obama, both have hard choices to make. Now, that's what he said last week. Translation of what he really meant. Israel's choice is to give back more land, land that's completely indefensible to people who want to annihilate her. The Palestinian choice is a promise to stop killing Israelis with terrorist methods and make good on that promise for at least an hour while the treaty is being signed. Statement two from Barack Obama. Republicans and Democrats must come together. Doesn't that sound nice? Republicans and Democrats must come together. Translation of what he really means. Republicans must do things the way Democrats want them done. Statement three from Barack Obama. My stimulus package will jumpstart our economy. Translation, my stimulus package will take money from those who earned it, divvy it out to those who did not earn it, destroy the middle class, and create a people who must depend on me as their friend or their daddy, I guess you could say, or, oh, what's the real title I'm looking for here? Yes, Big Brother. Statement four from Barack Obama. It's time to put ideology aside and come together. Translation, it's time for those who disagree with me to quit criticizing me. That's why we must pass hate speech legislation and the Fairness Doctrine. Statement five from Barack Obama. I'm so bipartisan, I will even work jointly with my former opponent, John McCain. Translation, McCain and I already agree on issues like the border and global warming, so working with him on those projects alone gives me a compromise factor of zero. Statement six, my programs will succeed because I have faith in the American people. Translation, my programs will succeed because a sucker is born every minute, except for the births we abort, but, well, let's not go there. You are listening to the Bob Siegel Show. You can weigh in on any of this at 1-888-344-1170. We also take email questions, questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel.net. Concerning enthusiasm for a football game, but not for God, similar to the phone call we got from Eric, Ann writes, good point. Well, thank you, Ann. I thought it was a good point, but I appreciate the encouragement. Concerning my guest hosting the Rick Amato Show, I did guest host the Rick Amato Show last Monday night, and Lise from El Cajon writes, Bob, I enjoyed the first hour of the program very much. Unfortunately, the second hour was past my bedtime on a work night. Your guest had such good insight into the issues you covered. I especially enjoyed the discussion about China and its impact on our economy. I thought you were a masterful host, and no one would ever have guessed you had to rush to get there. You covered some great topics. Lise was aware that I was called in at the last minute to guest host that. Well, Lise, you are always so complimentary and so uplifting when you write in. Thank you so much. This is from Al in Lemon Grove. He also comments on my guest hosting the Rick Amato Show. Al, however, did catch the second hour. In the first hour, we had discussed the economy. In the second hour, I talked a lot about the Fairness Doctrine, and I talked a lot about Barack Obama. Al says, your obvious homework concerning Obama was refreshing. This junk about conservatives saying it's great we finally elected an African-American overlooks the great oppression that Democrats have perpetrated versus conservative blacks, denigrating them at every turn. In 06, they systematically destroyed the candidacies of Blackwell and Michael Steele and Lynn Swan, who ran for key offices, and had they won, would have changed the 08 races radically. We simply take for granted, the left's penchant for destroying dangerous Republicans without seeing how bigoted and intolerant it is. Obama was right there. He couldn't pass up the first opportunity to say that the person he definitely wouldn't elect is Clarence Thomas. Never forget the lynching that the left engineered at Thomas's nomination in 91. That shows that Obama's is a victory of the extreme left in discrediting conservative blacks. No conservative black could have been nominated in the Democratic Party, whereas Colin Powell, who has clearly exemplified himself as being two-thirds leftist, could have easily been nominated in the Republican Party for 96. Obama solidified his leftist posture by saying that Ginsburg was his ideal candidate, referring, of course, to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, one of our Supreme Court justices, a Supreme Court justice who incidentally says that the Constitution tells you you have a right to never be offended. So I'm with our pal Al as he speaks against Ginsburg and some of what Obama's doing. Al continues, the left, after many failures of running lefties, going back to McGovern, have succeeded in selling the most extreme leftist ever. Just look at his first acts on grants to Africa and Guantanamo, plus having a LaRiza Queen in charge of the Secretary of Labor. That's from Al in Lemon Grove. Thank you for your comments, Al. I think they kind of speak for themselves. You articulated them very well. Now, concerning a blog that I did about the Fairness Doctrine, and of course, when people write comments on the blogs, they tend to use nicknames. So the Fairness Doctrine, of course, I expounded on this a lot last week on the Rick Amato Show, and there's a blog that you can read about it, bobsiegel.townhall.com, where I mentioned that it claims that it's about fairness, but it's really an attempt to get talk radio off the air. They're claiming that for every hour of conservative radio, there must be an hour of liberal radio. But the truth is that would put radio out of business because producers and managers of radio stations aren't going to deal with only getting ratings 15% of the time. And liberal shows like Air America go belly up. And the only reason NPR doesn't go belly up, even though it's very liberal, is it's paid for by your tax dollars. Anyway, just a little recap of what these guys are talking about. Commenting on my comments, Hick from the Sticks writes, they really don't care. Liberals are drunk with their own power. Drunkards cannot be trusted to reason. In the intoxication, they have mistaken the rejection of moderate Republicans as proof that America is liberal positive. So now they ignore overwhelming data against their data. It won't change unless we change it. Cyclone writes about the same comment, the Fairness Doctrine. He says, in addition, let's not forget Christian radio. There is rightly a lot of talk and focus on conservative talk radio, but let's not forget Christian radio. Imagine a station compelled to give equal time to all the other religions of the world. The unfairness doctrine is not just about squelching conservatives, but also Christians. Cyclone, you are absolutely correct. As the old saying goes, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And there is nothing about our current government which suggests that they would leave Christian radio alone. Equal time to Islam will be mandated. Hate speech legislation is already bound to make a critique of Islam against the law. Other religions as well will be clamoring for equal time on Christian stations. But at the moment, we still are allowed to broadcast. So while I'm allowed to broadcast with every legal fiber of my being, let me say, you're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. Going through some email comments. comments about my speech on the Fairness Doctrine, which I did on the Rick Motto Show, and there's also a blog version of it on Town Hall. Clem on Town Hall writes to me regarding the Fairness Doctrine. He says, with 14,000 radio stations in the U.S., this is a big story. Most of these broadcasters are struggling financially. That has always been the curse of the industry. Localism is more pernicious than the debate indicates. Now, when he says localism, he means having to cover local, unimportant stories rather than world events. He says, when I worked for WBAP in Fort Worth, we were the politically protected, but the smaller stations faced ruin with each payday. One station even put a roving spot news mobile unit on the streets to gain some freedom from localism. Their red van doubled as an ambulance and a reserve cop. That led to marathon hours of broadcasting, searches, and car wrecks. Once they even remained on the air for 3 days as the cops and firemen searched for a python that escaped from the zoo. The reporter ambulance driver became so bored that he fired his .45 into the air, pretended he was being attacked by the monstrous serpent. Under those conditions, the stations don't need qualified employees and usually rely on beginners willing to work for coffee and rolls. Not only will the stations dependent upon Rush and Hannity be reduced to playing rock and roll exclusively, but they will also face an affirmative requirement that they be able to show the FCC proof of having produced community-enhancing programs that are not political or otherwise controversial. Prepare for flag football and ladies soccer ad nauseum. Oh, God forbid, Cyclone, but thank you for writing in. This is from Lisa. Now, she's commenting on the fact that my blog lately has gotten some attention from a town hall, and I mentioned this to some of my subscribers. Last week, they had one of my quotes on the front page, and then this week on the second page, they highlighted my thing on the Fairness Doctrine. Now, coincidentally, I've noticed, as you know, if you go to my blog site, there's information on how to find my website. So usually if you find my blog, you find my website. Well, I have ways of reading the stats on my website, and I found an awful lot of hits coming from none other than Washington, D.C. this week. And the only thing I can think of that I did different was the townhall.com highlighted the Fairness Doctrine. Now, maybe that means nothing, and that's probably all it means. Maybe it's good news, because maybe some people in Washington, D.C. will learn something. Maybe it means that Obama's people are looking for ways to start studying those on the blogosphere. So I don't know. Either way, I sent my subscribers and I said, I don't know if this is good news or bad news or whatever the news is. It wouldn't hurt to get your prayers. And Lisa, responding to that, says, Bob, if God needs a voice, yours will be heard. You have a way of putting simple things into perspective. Right now, the Christian community needs to see the black and white of reality or the reality of their doctrine. I would look at this as a blessing. Well, thank you, Lisa. That's so uplifting that I'm going to look at it as a blessing. And if it isn't, Lisa, I will hold you responsible, of course. Okay, I'm going to lighten things up a little on a subject that's very important to me. It may not be all that important to you because it's not an earth-shattering event. And it has to do with a new rule in my life. And I need to tell you, at first, my friends were taken back by my recent rule. After all, who loves entertainment more than I do? But I informed them, my friends, of the new personal standard. No more evening movies. That is, no more evening movies in actual movie theaters. A video is fine. A matinee at a theater is also fine if it's a matinee. But with some exceptions for some special occasions only, I have cut out the evening cinematic experience. And I was a drama major, so for me this is like amputating an arm. Now my reason, it's not a profound one. Instead, it's fiscal and downright practical. I fall asleep too often in films. Why pay $11 for a nap when I can sleep at home anytime I want for free? No, this problem has nothing to do with my age. A bright, chipper, youthful 55, if you must know, has nothing to do with my age. It's just that in certain situations, I fall asleep far too easily. This is especially true when the TV is on. But dozing off in front of the tube does not cost me $11. So I don't have any rule about the television because I don't need to have a rule about the television. Believe it or not, you're actually listening to a night person. I'm a night person. I can stay up like a marathon man talking at Denny's over coffee with my friends, arguing theology, arguing politics, even arguing over films that would be putting me to sleep if I were actually watching them instead of talking about them. Even after I return home for the purpose of catching some sack time, I often experience the opposite problem. I am one of those men who lays awake at night with insomnia. For countless years, I would nod off on the couch in front of the Tonight Show or the local news. After turning off the TV, I would then head to my room, only to lie down on my bed, wide awake, thinking about too many things and never getting back to sleep. Well, folks, after repeating this ritual for what seemed like a lifetime, I finally put a TV in the bedroom. Only took me years to figure that one out. Now, when I'm ready to check out, I turn on the little box from my little remote control, and I am out like a light. Maybe because its dull, mindless roar detracts me from trying to meditate on the problems of the world from my pillow. Who says television is a waste of time? I find it quite useful. So yes, I often have trouble sleeping. But this is very important. When I do sleep, I am not a light sleeper. And I never have been. Noise does not keep me awake. If anything, repetitious noise has the opposite effect. I mean, almost hypnotic. I could probably nod off next to a jackhammer, but this isn't about jackhammers. Back to movie theaters. Even in high school and college, when I was much, much younger, I fell asleep at the movies. And I did not need to be tired, and the screen story did not need to be boring. I fell asleep during The Godfather the first time I saw it. I fell asleep during Star Wars, the original Star Wars. Even a re-release of Charlton Heston's The Ten Commandments. Those movies are great. I was on the edge of my seat watching them until I realized the movie was suddenly over and I had missed half of it. Well, wasteful as the ticket may have been, I would then fork up even more money the following day. After all, it is frustrating to miss a show you've been looking forward to. And if I conked out, I was determined to promptly return and view this film in its entirety. Now, how long has this been going on? Well, I graduated high school in 1972. That was the year it began. Shall we add up the bill? Should we add up the bill? It would be impossible because I have lost track. And frankly, it's so painful to think about how many wasted movie tickets along with repeat matinee showings one day later have been accumulated. That isn't even counting the extra $87 for a box of Milk Duds or $73 for hot tamales. If the final tab could be added, I'm sure the toll would be in the thousands upon thousands upon thousands of dollars. That's not an exaggeration. The figure would be astronomical. And so, no more evening movie theaters for me. I will save in the future. But I got to tell you, I cringe as I think about what I've wasted in the past. On the other hand, maybe I'm being too hard on myself. After all, I'm entitled to a social life just as anyone else is. I may have slept through movies, but I really haven't seen movies more than the average American. And how many lousy films are just as much a waste of time, especially because we stood awake for them? Besides, prior to seeing a movie with my friends, we are hanging out over dinner, enjoying each other's company, etc. And you can't put a price tag on time spent with special people. Still, the less money wasted, the better. Even when I feel I have a right to unwind. Evaporated finances are never a good thing. They cripple the mini economies of our lives and probably hurt the rest of the nation as well. Okay, here's where I'm going with all of this. I believe the United States government owes me a bailout. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
How many times have you heard the phrase, "they're all the same," applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home? Or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, "When people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt." For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuiltInc.com. That's ProBuiltInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
I'd like to remind all of my listeners that the Bob Siegel Show has a sister program on our sister station, KPRZ 1210 on the dial. Every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30, you can hear City Voice. On this provocative program, my good friend George Runyon interviews a different local Christian ministry every week. You can listen to the show while driving to church, and don't be surprised, you may find it so interesting that you'll stay in the parking lot continuing to listen and skipping those Sunday school donuts. That's City Voice with George Runyon, every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30 on our sister station, KPRZ 1210. But right now, you're listening to KCBQ 1170. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ 1170, Intelligent Talk Radio. A couple of weeks ago, we began a discussion about the second coming of Christ, triggered by the fact that I had taken a trip to Israel in November, and my brother and I went on one of those less popular but extremely interesting tours called the Third Temple Tour. There is a society in Israel that's thinking seriously about rebuilding the temple. Well, why that's important is that the temple is very associated with end times prophecy. But we don't want to lose our heads over this. Jesus said, "No man knows the day or the hour." He also said to his apostles, "It is not for you to know the times or seasons which the Father has set by his own authority." The day or the hour. Now, the term day in the ancient Jewish world did not necessarily mean a literal 24-hour day. Oftentimes, day referred to an event. And there are entire wars, years in length, recorded in the Bible that are referred to in the singular as the day of the Lord. Well, this will also be true for the ultimate day of the Lord. This day is really a series of final eschatological events that will usher in the second coming of Jesus Christ. And before Jesus comes, before the Christ comes, a man known as the Antichrist or man of lawlessness or son of perdition, three different names given to the same person, this man will rise through fame as a powerful leader. He will lead many sincere people astray and possibly broker some major peace deal in the Middle East to the point where Jew and Gentile alike will admire him. Some will undoubtedly view this new Roman-type emperor as the Messiah himself, and that's what the term Antichrist suggests. This is also why Jesus warned us about false Christs and false prophets. Well, the Apostle Paul, in accordance with a prediction in Daniel 9, tells us that Christ cannot return until a great apostasy first occurs, and this riveting event of history will involve the Jewish temple. I'm reading from the New International Version. I'm reading 2 Thessalonians 2:1 through 12. Paul says, "Concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our being gathered to him, we ask you, brothers, not to become easily unsettled or alarmed by some prophecy, report, or letter supposed to have come from us, saying that the day of the Lord has already come. Don't let anyone deceive you in any way, for that day will not come until the rebellion occurs and the man of lawlessness is revealed, the man doomed to destruction. He will oppose and will exalt himself over everything that is called God or is worshipped, so that he sets himself up in God's temple, proclaiming himself to be God. Don't you remember that when I was with you, I used to tell you these things? And now you know what is holding him back, so that he may be revealed at the proper time. For the secret power of lawlessness is already at work, but the one who now holds it back will continue to do so till he is taken out of the way. And then the lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord Jesus will overthrow with the breath of his mouth and destroy by the splendor of his coming. The coming of the lawless one will be in accordance with the work of Satan, displayed in all kinds of counterfeit miracles, signs, and wonders, and in every sort of evil that deceives those who are perishing. They perish because they refused to love the truth and so be saved. For this reason, God sends them a powerful delusion so that they will believe the lie and so that all will be condemned who have not believed the truth but have delighted in wickedness." Okay, as you can see, even though Israel is now a nation once again, the real Christ will not appear until the Antichrist is revealed. This smiley, charismatic demagogue may very well remain in authority long before we know for sure who he truly is, but we will certainly be able to make an identification without any shred of doubt after he sets up his throne in the Holy of Holies. Now, to say that this is an abomination to the Jews is the understatement of the century. The Holy of Holies was where God dwelt, where the Ark of the Covenant once was. Only the high priest was allowed back there, and he only once a year. And he used to tie a rope around his foot so that if he dropped dead, they could take him out on the rope and they wouldn't have to go back there. And here's a man that's going to go back there, set up a throne, and call himself God. That he does this in the inner temple chamber only adds to the utter horror. As a matter of fact, Daniel called this future event the abomination of desolation. Now, as for a third temple, the holy structure may be rebuilt and may stand for a long period of time before the coming of the Antichrist, possibly years, possibly even centuries. We do not know. But we do know that the Antichrist will not be discovered until he profanes the temple. And if there is no temple in Jerusalem today, it means the Antichrist is not going to be identified today, thus delaying the appearance of the real Christ. Now, we're going to go to the phones in just a moment, but here's a question that I get all the time when I'm talking about this subject. People say to me, well, Bob, how do you know Paul wasn't talking about some other temple? Many religions have temples. Why are you assuming that the Jewish temple in Jerusalem has to be rebuilt? That's a very good question, and I think I have an answer that will help you. Paul was a Jew. At the time he wrote his letter to the Thessalonians, the second temple still stood. And this was the only temple people would have thought about. What the Bible meant to its original audience must be the correct meaning for us today as well. Early Jewish Christians and Gentile Christians were not thinking about the temple of Aphrodite or the temple of Zeus when Paul wrote those words. Neither were they picturing Salt Lake City. There was one temple on the Mount in Jerusalem. Since this temple was destroyed a few years after Paul wrote that letter, by Prince Titus and the Roman Legion, and since Paul's prediction about the Antichrist was never fulfilled in the period of the Second Temple, we conclude that there must be a third temple someday. You're going, yeah, but Bob, for the Jews to rebuild their temple, they would first have to take down that Muslim shrine, the Dome of the Rock. Wouldn't that bring about World War III? Yeah, it would probably, but such a world war is also prophesied in connection with the second coming of the Messiah. Now, on the other hand, we should not hastily assume that the dome will be removed by Jews, supposing God sent an earthquake, supposing Ahmadinejad or some other evil maniac fired a missile upon Israel that accidentally destroyed the Muslim shrine. This could happen very easily, although people would still find a way to blame Israel for the destruction. Here's another question, one final question that I get associated with this. Bob, okay, for Christ to return, the Antichrist must first rise to power and profane the new temple, which means there must someday be a new temple, even though we do not know for sure if this will happen in our lifetime. Do you at least have an opinion about the timetable? Yes, I stand by Christ's words, nobody knows the day or the hour, but do I have an opinion about whether we're living in these final days? I do, and I will share my opinion when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. We're going to go back to the phones in just a moment, but one of the questions that I'm frequently asked regarding the end times, I'm always one that says, Jesus says nobody knows the day or the hour, and I stand with that. There is a sign that's going to come, the sign of the Antichrist profaning the temple. That has not happened yet, and the temple would have to be rebuilt for that to happen. But do I have an opinion? Do I at least have an opinion about whether we're the last generation? Oh, you know me better than that. I always have an opinion. Two things make me wonder if the final chapter may actually be on the horizon. First, technology and communication have made the world smaller than it used to be. No one country can any longer be disconnected from the good or bad events of neighbor nations. Humans now have the ability to destroy the entire planet through nuclear or biological warfare, something previous generations of history never had to deal with. One must ponder how long that can go on. Does the Bible speak of a time when humans will be capable of annihilating themselves? It most certainly does. Matthew 24:22 says, if those days had not been cut short, no one would survive. But for the sake of the elect, the days will be shortened. But there's another reason, a very intriguing reason, and that's that the relationship between Christians and Jews has never been better. Now, I'm not talking about liberal Christianity. The World Council of Churches, by an amazing coincidence, just happens to accept any newly fashioned politically correct drivel, no matter how much it contradicts the Bible. This is why we will hear about the Israeli conquest of the poor, disenfranchised Palestinians in those kinds of churches. But evangelical Christians who take the Bible seriously rather than changing their opinions with the whim have been friends to Israel for many years, and this has grown in the last few decades. When I first became a Christian in the early 1970s, the Jews I spoke with were very suspicious when Christians extended a hand of friendship. Now, this should be easy to understand because church history is tragically stained with pogroms and all kinds of disgraceful anti-Semitic conduct by people who called themselves Christians and never really obeyed the teachings of Jesus or the rest of the New Testament. And anti-Semitism is on the rise today all over the world, even in America. Our college campuses are becoming increasingly anti-Semitic, although they use the term anti-Zionist instead. You see, it's not politically correct to be anti-Semitic in America today, but it's very politically correct to be anti-Zionist. And yet, since a Zionist is merely one who believes that Jews have a right to their own homeland, the difference between being anti-Jewish and anti-Semitic is microscopic, if there's even a difference at all. The difference between being anti-Jewish and anti-Zionist doesn't seem to exist. Now, although liberal Jews tend to buy into the lies that the world teaches about Zionism, conservative Jews are waking up and realizing that evangelical Christians are just about the only friends they have left in the world. We have never seen such a close alliance between Jews and Christians before, unless we want to maybe draw a comparison with first century Christianity. And Jewish radio talk show hosts like Dennis Prager and Michael Medved defend Christianity better than Christians do. On the flip side, pastors such as John Hagee speak out for Israel and take a lot of flack for doing so. And this is not merely about Bible prophecy or anticipation of Christ's second coming. Many Christians defend Jews for human rights reasons alone. One would think that such an obvious bond would have been going on a long time, but it hasn't been. The trend is relatively recent when we contrast it to the 2,000 years of church history. Even more recent is the trust the Jews are starting to develop for this new breed of Christian. Now, I find the whole thing to be an intriguing phenomenon, and unprecedented alliances do make me wonder about whether we are the last generation. Still, I don't know. But one thing I can promise, there are Jews in Israel preparing for the Third Temple. It's starting to happen, and we may not have to wait much longer. Okay, Cameron, let's go to the phones. And Barrett in PB, welcome to the Bob Siegel Show. Cameron. Oh, Cameron, let's go to the phones.
Hello?
Yeah, Barrett, welcome to the Bob Siegel Show.
There's no such thing as an anti-Semitic Christian. I think John Hagee does have some misgivings about Israel, but he's not anti-Semitic like he's been accused of.
Oh no, I made that point. He's not anti-Semitic at all. Yeah. He actually has defended Israel. I don't even know that he has misgivings about Israel. He's defended Israel quite a bit.
I wanted to take issue with you about Genesis because you said that the Bible refers to a day as an era.
That's one way that the word day can be used.
Yeah, no place does it refer to days as era successfully in a week, and the only measurement of time that we have that is not astronomical is the week. In other words, a measurement of time that's not tied to the earth, sun, or the moon's rotation, and that's the week, which comes from the Bible, and although they're named after Roman gods, I think, Saturday, Sunday, or whatever.
That's correct. But Saturday's named after Saturn, for instance.
Yeah, but the week comes from the Bible, and those are successive days in the Bible. Those are clearly not eras. I think that the reason that the Bible was kept so simple is because every time science answers a question, it presents 100 more questions. So it was kept simple also, in my opinion, Bob, so that people who are very prideful will not accept it. They'll reject it. It's storybook Sunday school children's story-like. And I think it's that way for a very reason. Jesus said, lest you become like one of these little ones, you will not enter into the kingdom of God. And the Bible's foundation is on Genesis, which is as written for one of the little ones.
Okay, let's unpack some of what you're saying, Barrett. First of all, I have absolutely no problem believing that God could have created the world in 6 literal days, and he may very well have. He could have done it in 6 seconds if he wanted to. But it's also true that the Bible portrays God as being removed from time, that time and space is a human concept and a human limitation. And if there was a time, for lack of a better word, when only God existed, and even God himself doesn't exist in time, then when people say to me, how long did it take God to create the world? Was it 6 billion years or was it 6 days? My answer would be, I don't believe it took him any amount of time at all. Because yeah. Time is something that we measure. Another thing that's interesting, Barrett, and I'm a believer in taking Genesis literally, most of it. Genesis is 50 chapters in length, and from chapter 2 to chapter 50, chapter 2 starting with Adam and Eve in the garden, chapter 50 going all the way to the time of Joseph, that is written in a literal historical Hebrew narrative. Chapter 1 was not written that way. It was written in a style of Hebrew poetry. It was very common in those days to give a poetic overview of an event followed by a detailed account. And another argument that it might be poetry is the repetition. It does keep saying, and there was evening and there was morning one day. They keep repeating that. That's very similar to structures you would find in the Hebrew Psalms. It's also very interesting that they say evening and morning before the sun was even created. And one would ask the question, where do we get evening and morning from if the sun actually hasn't been created yet?
The same place we're going to get light from when Jerusalem comes down to Earth.
Sure, sure, sure. And it's possible, and we can always say with God all things are possible. And again, I have friends at Creation Research who argue very much for a literal 6-day creation, and I have great respect for them. All I'm saying, Barrett, is that there are other people who look at that, and although I would definitely, I don't think we can get around a real Adam and Eve fall into sin yeah. nature. There's too much theology. When it comes to whether God created the world in this amount of time or whether he's removed from time, I would say to somebody, if they were interested in Christianity, if that's the only hill that's bothering you, don't let that be the hill that you want to die for. Because the important thing is that we were created by God, that we do have a creator. And of course, admitting that the world may have taken a longer time from our point of view to create doesn't mean we have to buy into the theory of evolution either. Evolution and the age of the earth are not necessarily one and the same subject.
Well, the reason a lot of people like to take naps in the afternoon is because scientists that are Christians say that the day used to be a lot shorter. But you're talking about a massive possible change in the days being eras. But what troubles me is in your book, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But, on pages 81 and 82 and 83, you almost give credence to evolution. In fact, on page 81, you actually talk about our species has had a long time to evolve. And that sentence has miffed me considerably. So that's one of the reasons why I was concerned about your interpretation of
Yeah. Well, let me just sure. I understand that. I do. And let me clarify. I personally do not accept the theory of macroevolution. Microevolution is another story. Microevolution is observable and repeatable changes within a species. But as far as people evolving from apes or even ape-like creatures, as evolutionists are now starting to change the terminology, I do not believe in that. What I was saying in my book, though, is that Genesis was not written with a lot of information about how God created the world. And so I believe the way I said it in my book, but if I didn't say it exactly this way in the book, I'll say it now. Genesis is simply saying in the beginning God, as opposed to saying in the beginning hydrogen. It's telling us our origin. Genesis is only 3 chapters in length where it talks about the creation of the world and the fall of man into sin. A few more chapters for the flood and the Tower of Babel. They race through those events. Then they crank it down with great intricate detail when they get to the story of Abraham and his family.
Yeah.
That tells us something about the priority of the author. They're obviously giving a quick review of some traditions and understandings about creation that had been handed down orally. Now, I wish we had more information about it. I'd gladly trade 20 chapters of Leviticus for more information about how God created the world. But my point is that what I said in the book is it leaves room for the theory of evolution or a better theory. I would put the operative words, Barrett, on or a better theory. I do not accept that theory. Anyway, we're out of time. Give us a call again next week if you'd like to talk about this some more. Barrett, I always enjoy talking to you. Take care, my friend. And thank you for joining us this Super Bowl Sunday. This was a Super God Sunday. We'll see you next Sunday.
Thank you for listening to The Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton, helping infertile families have children. Tom Pinkerton would like to invite you to help Bob expand his radio program by donations or sponsorship. For more information about Bob's ministry, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and get information about Bob's books. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net. The new